Thank you very much, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, February 20th, 2016. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. A political scientist says conflicts within Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party may degenerate into civil war if not controlled by President Mugabe.
I think that we are reaching a situation where things are getting very bad because some of the war veterans have formed a new political party. It is not just a party from the trade union movement.
Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti says the Zimbabwe's economy is likely to record a negative growth this year.
ZANU-PF have redefined failure and economic failure. This economy is in a deep recession. The government has officially revised the growth rate of 2016 to 1%, but I insist, as I've always insisted, that the growth rate in 2016 will be minus 3%.
And as usual, we'll take a closer look at women's issues. Stay tuned. A political scientist says conflicts within Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party may degenerate into civil war if not controlled by President Robert Mugabe. Professor Shadrack Gutto of the University of South Africa tells Studio 7, Zimbabwe's unfolding political crisis in which ZANU-PF factions are fighting for the succession of President Mugabe is bad news for the Southern African nation.
The so-called war veterans are the ones who initiated the so-called land grab policy, which ZANU-PF later on adopted at its own policy. So it was driven from the so-called war veterans. Many of them were not in the war, but it is a political phenomenon in Zimbabwe. And from that point of view, I think now that the war veterans are clashing with the police, because at that time, the war veterans challenged the police to say, come and remove us from the farms that we are occupying. Mugabe was quite clever at that time, and ZANU-PF, to say, we are not going to remove you. Instead, we'll make this our national policy and escape from that. This time around is going to be more difficult. And I think that we are reaching a situation where things are getting very bad because some of the war veterans have formed a new political party. It is not just a party from the trade union movement and so on. So the war veterans will be divided at this point. So you are right to just send a signal to say, might this lead to a civil war? And if it is not properly managed and contained, it may reach that level.
And does it appear as if the president has actually lost control of the party?
I think the president lost the control of the party very long ago, or rather consumed the party into himself.
That was Professor Shadrack Gutto, a political scientist with the University of South Africa, speaking with Studio 7 from Johannesburg. Former Finance Minister Tendai Biti says Zimbabwe's economy is likely to record a negative growth this year. Biti says the country is likely going to record minus 3% growth instead of the 1.7% projected by some international finance houses. Biti, who is also the leader of the People's Democratic Party, says the country is heading for disaster.
ZANU-PF have redefined failure and economic failure. This economy is in a deep recession. The government has officially revised the growth rate of 2016 to 1%, but I insist, as I've always insisted, that the growth rate in 2016 will be minus 3%. I insist, as I've always insisted, that the growth rate in 2017 will be minus 5% and not the projected 2.5%. In 2008, we had a crisis of overaccumulation. This crisis of overaccumulation expressed itself in hyperinflation. So we had too much money chasing too few goods. Every Zimbabwean was a billionaire. Every Zimbabwean was a trillionaire. Now, in a space of less than 5 years, ZANU-PF has taken us to the opposite end of the crisis of underaccumulation, which is the opposite of the crisis of overaccumulation, which hyperinflation was. Now we have a crisis of underaccumulation where no one has got a dollar in the pocket. Unlike 2008, shops are full of goods, but no one is buying them. We are in a deflation. And these two crises, it's very difficult, if almost impossible, for any government to be so weak to be so such a failure to take you in those crises in a space of less than 10 years. But ZANU-PF has done it miraculously.
And let's talk about Harare working with the IMF. We have heard positive vibes from the IMF that Zimbabwe is turning the corner.
Look, we are Zimbabweans. No one can tell us that Zimbabwe is turning a corner. The government itself is not even claiming that it is turning a corner. Let's start with the revenue collection. Mr. Pasi published his results 2 weeks ago. The shortfall of revenue last year was 24%. So for the first time, we now have a budget deficit that's almost like 30% of GDP. They've abandoned the principle that I introduced of we eat what we kill.
That was Tedai Biti, former finance minister and current president of the People's Democratic Party, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare. The Mutare City Council has retrenched nearly 250 workers this year in line with recommendations contained in a special audit report conducted last year by the Ministry of Local Government, which revealed that the local authority has a lot of redundant employees. The council is now also expected to advertise the position of town clerk following the resignation of Opet Muzawazi, who was accused in the report of being allegedly corrupt. Our correspondent Lloyd Amoyo has the story.
Mutare Mayor Councillor Tatenda Namarare told residents during a consultative meeting organized by the United Mutare Residents and Ratepayers Trust that the council is currently implementing the recommendations. Namarare said they are at the moment streamlining the local authority in order to have a sustainable wage bill. The council had at least 1,500 employees at the time the special audit was conducted in December last year. At least 75% of its revenues was being gobbled by salaries. The mayor said the council did not renew the contracts of the affected workers in an attempt to reduce its huge wage bill.
In terms of reducing our employment costs, we have laid off all the 246 contract employees, and we have a few remaining contract employees whose contracts will be terminated.
Namarare also said the council is currently looking for a town clerk and a chamber secretary in line with the government recommendations. He bemoaned mayor's lack of executive powers, which the city further noted has led to serious managerial challenges in most local authorities. He said as a result, mayors are being bypassed by managers when allocating land to the people, an issue that was highlighted in the audit report as promoting corruption.
We are actually appealing to the local government minister that if you could allow us as mayors to have certain signing powers over certain important council activities, I think the current challenges that we are facing, we might be able to control it.
The mayor said current mayors need to have authority to approve any land sales together with senior council managers so as to minimize underhand deals in land sales. The chairperson of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Local Government, Urban and Rural Development, Irene Zindi, who is also the Mutasa South member of the House of Assembly, decried the government's usually slow action on reports of maladministration and corruption. She was reacting to concerns expressed by residents on delays in reporting alleged cases of corruption in the Mutare City Council. Zindi said it was heartbreaking that some council officials were allegedly involved in corrupt activities.
The rest of the citizens suffer simply because of people who had actually awarded them such hefty allowances, such hefty salaries at a time when service delivery is suffering.
Some of the ex-top council officials are planning to take the city to court, claiming that their contracts were unfairly terminated. She expressed dismay over the slow pace of the government in addressing cases of corruption.
We are critical that the government, which is the executive, almost always tends to drag their feet to take corrective measures. They will only take corrective measures when so much harm would have been done. And that this is what is obtained with the city of Mutare.
Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Amoyo.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States welcomes the agreement by executive and legislative branches in Haiti on a roadmap for governing the country until a new president is democratically elected. The U.S. acknowledges the constructive role played by the special mission of the Organization of American States in fostering a spirit of consensus among Haitian stakeholders as the agreement was negotiated and finalized. The United States also echoes the core group's statement of February 6th, noting our wish that all actors will keep the best interests of Haiti and its people above all other considerations. The immediate job of the interim president will be to quickly hold presidential elections, which under the agreement are scheduled to take place on April 24th. A presidential runoff due to be held last month was canceled after the second-place finisher threatened to boycott the vote over allegations of fraud in the first round. Protesters took to the streets, and the perceived security environment deteriorated. Electoral intimidation, destruction of property, and violence run counter to Haiti's democratic principles and laws. The United States looks forward to continuing to work with Haiti and its international partners to further strengthen democracy in Haiti, reflective of the region's collective commitments under the Inter-American Democratic Charter. The April 24th elections will allow voters to participate in an electoral process that is transparent, credible, free of violence, and representative of the will of the Haitian people. Once the electoral cycle is completed, the United States looks forward to working with Haiti to continue the progress it has made in the past few years, particularly in infrastructure, agriculture, health, economic opportunity, and institution building. Fully functioning democratic institutions will make progress in these areas easier and more long-lasting.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And as usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight, we have the pleasure of speaking to a woman ex-combatant who wanted to be known by the name Comrade Chasarira, as she fears victimization. She is a member of People First, led by Amai Joyce Mojuru. Tell us about yourself. You are a woman ex-combatant, and you were also in the skirmishes that happened in Harare on Wednesday. Tell us a little bit about your life history and how you got to be there on Wednesday.
We heard it on the TV that on that day, for the following day, we are wanted in Harare for a meeting which was going to be addressed by our patron. But to be surprised, when we got into Harare to the sports center, we found there was police all over. Even to the Zanzibar headquarters, there were police. The police started spraying some gas to us and to other comrades. So we started running all over the town. And some were in their cars, were just everywhere, and we were not yet. We slept at the sick center, waiting to be addressed till today.
So who was supposed to address you? Who is your patron?
Our patron is President Mugabe.
Who came to tell you that your patron was not coming to address you?
We were told on the TV the previous night that tomorrow morning all the combatants are supposed to come to Harare.
We've also seen that within ZANU-PF itself, there are different factions. What is the real truth of these factions? Where do you, as ex-combatant, women ex-combatants, where are you aligned?
At the moment, we are divided. Some, they are at the G40, some at the Mnangagwa, but as for me, I'm at the Mujuru.
You are openly saying you're now with Mai Mujuru. Why have you chosen that as the party that works for you?
Because I've wasted my time for nothing. Just think of it, I went to war when I was 12 and now I'm 57. Nothing I've gained from this government which I've worked for. And I've got nothing. My children are not working. Myself, I'm not working. We have got rent and we stay in town. We want to eat day and day. We are now grannies. I've got one daughter who is employed. She's the one who is looking after all this family. But the mother is an ex-combatant.
Tell us a little bit about your family. How big is your family? And since you came back from the war, how have you been able to cope and to just go back into society as a woman?
Since I came back from war, I've been sustaining myself with a little of... I'm earning 175, and I've been selling this and that and to sustain my family. and I managed to educate my girl, and the other girl is not now educating the other boys and girls in the family. As you know, our culture, if one is educated, you educate the others. By the grace of the Lord, we are managing to do this, and we are farming, but farming is useless to us because we don't have input. We don't have people who come and buy our things, and there's no range at the moment.
You were also talking about some of the trauma that you witnessed during the war. Tell us a little bit about that. You entered war when you were a young girl, and then you said you faced a lot of challenges as a woman. Tell us your experience
during
before
the
coming
war,
back.
We were forced to sleep with big people, sleep with old people, and we have Afghanistan oil. And we were forced to do things which we were not supposed to do, but we were just looking at them because we thought that's the war. But it's now only I'm realizing that that was not war. It was something which is against my will.
Time is not on our side. Thank you, Chasarira, for having been our guest on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye. And finally, in sports news, the Zimbabwe national cricket team has been given a rousing send-off for their 2016 International Cricket Council T20 World Cup. Michael Gariati reports.
This was the song and dance that characterized the day as the cricket family bade farewell to their national team, which left today for the T20 World Cup that will run in India from March 8. The team has left early in order to play a series of preparatory matches as well as to acclimatize to the conditions, which are far much different from this part of the world. The cricket family is hoping for a better show from their usually disappointing team, and the chairman of Zimbabwe Cricket, Tawengwa Mkhushlane, told the players that the authorities will not accept any excuses when they come back home after the games.
Hamilton and your boys, it's high time you all played to your potential. You are like every other team in terms of talent, so there can never be an excuse for failure. So go out there and play as if your life depends on it, and bring us back that silverware.
Even the Minister of Sport and Recreation, Makosi Hlongwane, warned the players that their followers will not take it lightly, any failure on the part of the Chevrons.
I would like the team to appreciate that the whole of Zimbabwe is behind them. They would obviously not be serious and concerned fans if they fail to register their displeasure when the results do not go Zimbabwe's way.
Zimbabwe are in the same qualifying group with Scotland, Hong Kong and Afghanistan. Should they top this group, the Chevrons will then join the likes of South Africa, Sri Lanka, West Indies and England in the second round. Team manager Christian Chitsike said their aim is to first get out of their qualifying group before they can make any promises.
Our target is obviously to get out of the qualifying rounds and get into the tournament proper. That is our minimum target.
Captain Hamilton Masakadza also sang the same tune of second round qualification, but said he is confident they would achieve that feat.
The first target is to get through that qualifying stage and then we'll take it from there.
Masakadza dismissed Hong Kong and Scotland as challengers and said they would like to prove a point by overcoming bitter rivals, Afghanistan.
Our main thing right now is to make sure we try and get one back on Afghanistan. We've been rather difficult for us of late. So.
According to the fixtures released by the International Cricket Council, after Scotland, Zimbabwe will play Hong Kong before rounding off their group matches with a game against Afghanistan on March the 12th. Skeptics, however, are of the opinion that the Chevrons will be lucky to come out of that qualifying staging group. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Now to recap today's top stories. A political scientist says conflicts within Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party may degenerate into civil war if not controlled by President Robert Mugabe. And former finance minister Tendai Biti says Zimbabwe's economy is likely to record a negative growth this year. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Kande. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C. Good night, Zimbabwe.